leader of the Islamic Revolution says enemies are seeking rifts among Muslims to impede their progress. Iran's presidential hopefuls hold the third and final debate on television. Tehran substitute Fratah Pir's leader urges presidential candidates to adhere to law. Scores of people are killed and wounded, including Iranian pilgrims, and bomb blasts in Iraq. And Turkey becomes relatively calm as Prime Minister calls for an end to anti-government protests. In the name of God, the compassion of the merciful, hello everyone and welcome to the late edition of IRIN in English News with me, Nima Chitsas. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has warned against enemy plots to create divisions among Muslim nations to impede their progress. In a meeting with Iranian officials and ambassadors of Muslim countries in Tehran on the occasion of the anniversary of the appointment of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to prophethood, the leader said, hegemonic powers intend to sow discord among Muslims in order to distract them from their main issues and making progress. He said, the most important duty of Muslim nations at this juncture is to remain vigilant and to know their roadmap and enemy plots in order to be able to take appropriate measures and avoid mistakes. The leader added, the enemy's main scheme is to create rift and conflict among Muslims. So unity, solidarity, cooperation, and rapport are the most pressing needs of the Muslim world. The leader said, the enemy seeks to drive a wedge between Muslims to deflect their attention from their main enemies, which are corrupt capitalism and the Zionist regime of Israel. Ayatollah Khamenei added that sacrilegious acts against Islam and Islamophobia campaigns cannot have been orchestrated without the design and finance of superpowers and their intelligence services. Iranian presidential candidates held their third and final live debate on Friday that was aired on state TV. The final round of presidential hopefuls debate focused on foreign policy. The eight candidates used their time to discuss their foreign policy approaches and their plans on how to tackle the problem that the country is faced with. The debate also included issues such as the presence of foreign troops in the region and Iran's comprehensive talks with the P5 plus one group on the country's peaceful nuclear energy program. On the second round of debate held on Wednesday, candidates outlined their social and cultural policies, which was also aired live by Iran State TV. Tehran's substitute Fratah Pir's leader has called on presidential candidates to adhere to the law and accept the final result of the June 14 elections. Addressing worshippers, Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Ahmad Khatami said, law abidance is an unchangeable principle, and if a candidate has an objection to not being elected, he must pursue it legally. He added that the message of the upcoming presidential and council elections is that the Iranian people are in charge of their own destiny. The cleric stated that the international community is watching the election closely and that the vote has somehow become internationalized. Khatami said, public participation is important because each vote cast will be another yes to the Islamic Republic. He also noted that religious leaders do not have the right to back any candidate, and it is the Iranian nation that has the final say in this matter. He said, the government does not support any candidate, and the leader has also repeatedly stated that he does not back any of the candidates. Fourteen Iranians are among several pilgrims martyred in a terrorist bomb attack that hit their convoy near the Iraqi city of Bakuba, north of the capital Baghdad. The incident occurred on Friday morning when an explosive-laden vehicle exploded in Maghdadiya, located about 90 kilometers north of Baghdad. Nearly 20 people were killed when the blast ripped through the bus as the vehicle packed with pilgrims was heading for the holy city of Najaf. At least 45 other people, many of them thought to be Iranians, were also wounded in the bombings. The terrorist attack comes on the heels of Thursday's deadly shootings and bombings that left at least 10 people dead and over 50 others injured across Iraq. Syrian troops have managed to recapture the village of Al-Bawaida al-Sharqiya near the recently liberated strategic city of Al-Qusair. Syrian army troops have gone ahead with their mop-up operation and final pockets of foreign-backed militant groups in north of Qusair. Security forces were also sending reinforcements to the northern province of Aleppo, where some parts of the territory have been in militant groups' hands for months. Clashes broke out at dawn between the army and militant groups on the outskirts of Daba village near the border with Lebanon. Dozens of militants were killed in the latest round of clashes in Daba and Al-Abawdiya. Analysts say Syrian army troops will now turn their attention on the central city of Homs, where some areas are still in the rebels' hands. Turkish streets appeared calm on Friday morning, but protesters remained defiant following a speech given by Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan earlier in the day, demanding an end to the demonstrations sweeping the country. Despite earlier comments that suggested he could be softening his stand, Erdogan delivered a fiery speech on his return from his four-day trip. Meantime, Turkish protesters say Erdogan's anger with them prevents him from fully understanding the cause of anti-government demonstrations.
The thing that should happen is the people should, you know, take the charge back, and it should all be done in a diplomatic way rather than in a violent manner. But I'm not sure. We heard of some rumors that the police and the people were going to march here against the crowd over here, but I'm not sure whether that will happen or not, because we didn't see anything last night. But we're going to keep on coming here and we'll see.
I think it's more dividing the Turkish population, because the explanation of Tayyip was really brutal and without logical political sense.
Yeah, he just came back yesterday. He made two announcements, one at airport, one at his home. They were both aggressive, still aggressive. I personally was hoping that he would back down a little bit, just a little bit at least, to ease the tension in here, but he didn't. I'm still hoping that, as a citizen, as a democratic citizen, I'm still hoping that he's going to back down.
Healthcare workers from Greece and Belgium, as well as members of Greek trade unions, took part in a protest marching to the Greek parliament. Our correspondent in Athens has more on the issue.
Doctors and nurses at Greek public hospitals went on strike on Friday to protest the deep spending cuts in the healthcare sector, an indirect consequence of harsh austerity policies that have bashed the already ailing Greek economy and most of its productive sectors. Protesters gathered outside the health ministry at 11 a.m. holding placards while raising their voice against the deterioration of their working conditions. Disappointingly enough for the organizers of the strikes, previous mobilizations have done little to nothing to deter the tripartite government from further trimming the national healthcare budget. Yet, as representatives of the doctors explained to Irin TV, the national health system and the National Organization for Healthcare Provision are both about to collapse, while patients are oftentimes put at risk due to a persistent lack of pharmaceutical equipment and supplies. Healthcare professionals pointed out that there are now 1.5 million unemployed and uninsured citizens who lack access to basic healthcare, thus silently building up a healthcare bomb that could explode any time. In the same line, the population's vaccination coverage has dramatically decreased, creating a new danger of epidemics. The Greek healthcare system now counts approximately 6,500 doctors' vacant posts, as many doctors are deciding to turn their back on the system because of detrimental delays in the disbursement of their salaries. Non-medical staff has dropped from 80,000 to 65,000, while hospital beds have fallen to only 35,000.
With soaring unemployment currently hovering around 30% within the general population and consecutive cuts in most of the productive sectors of the Greek economy, today was the turn one more time of workers within the healthcare industry of the country to take to the streets and demonstrate against austerity measures imposed upon them by the troika of international creditors. Organizers taking the floor one after the other underline they can no longer live in dignity with additional cuts in wages and salaries.
Egyptian president has dismissed the opposition's demands for early presidential elections, calling it absurd and illegal. Mohamed Morsi said talks about early presidential elections as a matter which violates the law, constitution, and the people's will. He said expressing opinion peacefully does not worry us, but using or inciting violence is unacceptable and Egypt government will not allow it. His remarks come as a protest petition campaign is collecting nationwide signatures to withdraw confidence from Morsi and push for early presidential polls. At least one person has been also killed and more than 20 others injured in clashes between supporters of Muslim Brotherhood and anti-government protesters in the northern town of Damanhour. The clashes broke out between members of the Brotherhood and the youth revolutionary forces in the Al-Saa Square. Security forces fired tear gas to disperse the two groups. Britain's Guardian newspaper has revealed that the U.S. National Security Agency continues to indiscriminately collect Americans' phone records. However, U.S. government defended the secret surveillance of U.S. citizens' phone calls, claiming the practice a critical tool in protecting the nation from terrorist threats. A secret intelligence court in the U.S. had ordered the telecommunications company Verizon to provide the National Security Agency with the phone records of millions of Americans. The Guardian obtained and published the top secret court order, which compelled Verizon to open its customers' phone records to U.S. National Security Agency on an ongoing daily basis. This is while U.S. citizens believe that the right of the people to be secured in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures must not be violated. The EU Emergency Response Center said on Friday that Europe's second largest river will peak in Nagyabikes, near the border with Slovakia on Saturday morning and in the capital Budapest on Monday. The Commission said in both areas the highest ever measured water levels are expected. A state of emergency was declared in the country. Some 10,000 people, including soldiers and volunteers, are working together to reinforce dikes along 700 kilometers of the river with sandbags. The capital is likely to be the worst hit as the river is expected to rise to 8.85 meters, some 25 centimeters higher than the previous record set in 2006. About 400 people were evacuated from several villages. Central Europe's river floods have already killed 15 people and forced mass evacuations in Austria, Germany, and the Czech Republic. And finally, Pakistan's new premier has unveiled a 25-member cabinet that must tackle major economic and security challenges following a sweeping election win. The 25 ministers were sworn in by President Asif Ali Zardari, but Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has not yet said who will be appointed to run each ministry. That announcement is expected by Saturday. The cabinet also includes two women. State-run Pakistan television says Sharif may keep the foreign ministry portfolio for himself. Sharif has pledged to tackle a sinking economy, widespread power outages, and ongoing militancy. And that's a wrap for now. Join us tomorrow with the latest updates. Till then, take care and have a very great time. Goodbye now.